Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. And as you know, on this show, I have the great opportunity to interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are many times shaping the overall, and many times not only just shaping, but changing the overall sports business industry. Today, we're going to talk sports betting with Barry Jonas, the managing director of Truist Securities. Barry, welcome to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Thanks, Wayne. Great to be here. Great to see you again.
Really excited to have you on the show. You know, I get to see you all over the country and, quite frankly, the world. When there's anything going on within the sports betting industry, the gaming industry, the casino industry, you're there. So it's exciting to have you on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. And Barry, I would love for our audience, if you could share what you do at Truist Securities and a little bit of your background.
Yeah. So I am the senior equity research analyst at Truist Securities. So Truist Bank is the sixth biggest commercial bank in the country, domestic focused, and the securities division helps companies and investors. So what I do is I am a sector focused analyst. I analyze the casino industry, and my clients are hedge funds, mutual funds, pension funds, really any investor looking to understand gaming. Your typical analyst, let's say a Fidelity, may cover multiple sectors and really sort of have not enough time, let's say, to be in the weeds the way I am. So my main focus here is gaming, casinos, gaming REITs, and of course, digital gaming, sports betting, iGaming. My background, so by the way, like what I'll do on a day-to-day basis is I'll put out financial models. I'll try to understand the company, their earnings outlook. I'll speak with the company. I'll speak with competitors and talk to investors and really sort of just be in the know. I'll speak to folks like you working with really exciting up-and-coming companies that potentially will impact the public companies. But I'm really focused on public equities that trade on the stock market. So my background is I actually worked in industry. I got recruited by Jim Murren at MGM. It was called MGM Mirage at the time in 2003 to move out to Vegas from New York, which is where I'm from. And I worked in sort of a corporate strategy group at MGM, just sort of focused on internal efficiencies, M&A integration. After about a year plus, I had an amazing opportunity to go to IGT, which at the time was the largest slot machine company in the world, to do M&A for them, working closely with the CEO at the time. While there, I really had my finger on the pulse of everything new and exciting around gaming and digital back in 03, 04, 05. Was obviously not legal at the time in the US, but there was this sense that it's coming and companies need to be positioned to take advantage when it will come to the US. So I was part of various deals focused mostly on European markets, just providing technology content. So IGT, a company acquired called WagerWorks back in the mid 2000s, which I worked on that deal. So after a number of years of working for IGT in Vegas, I had some personal needs to move back to New York. 4 years in Vegas were fantastic, and I made some of the closest friendships of my life, many of whom have risen through the ranks across the gaming industry. But being in New York around 07, 08, 09, I was working remotely for IGT at the time. So I was head of finance of IGT China, which, you know, was working on various initiatives with the sports lottery, the welfare lottery, and unfortunately was hit by the recession in 08, 09. Took a package left and geographically felt I wanted to stay in New York. And I had all this great experience being in Vegas, all this relationship, this Rolodex, this knowledge set. And short of moving to Asia or back to Vegas, I thought, what can I do to take advantage of this? And the answer was Wall Street, where I could kind of, instead of working for these companies, I could analyze them and really help investors understand them and try to decide where to invest and allocate capital accordingly. So I've been doing equity research since 2010. Again, my goal is really just to have my finger on the pulse of the industry and really try to help investors make money at the end of the day.
Well, Barry, it's really fascinating how you've come up through the industry, really understanding it. And now, as you said, you know, being able to analyze it. And when you talk about, you know, some of the public companies, you talk about you have the opportunity to really talk with the people that are running the public companies within the overall gaming industry. What are some of the companies that you cover today?
Sure. So we cover, I cover MGM, which is fascinating having worked there. I cover IGT, you know, cover companies like Caesars Entertainment, Penn National Gaming, DraftKings, you know, and then also companies like Vici, GLPI on the REIT side, a lot of the technology companies, Light and Wonder, IGT, as I said. So really kind of runs the gamut, large cap operators, small, mid-size, to various technology companies who are working on fascinating things. The one area we are focused less on is Macau, which is ironic having worked so much there in my days at IGT, but just Truist at the moment is more domestic focused. We try to really go deep in the weeds to US gaming, which obviously digital gaming is a big focus of now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you talk about DraftKings and MGM and Caesars, and they're some of the leaders, you know, when it comes to sports betting today. And I you know, obviously FanDuel, and I'm sure you've over the years have been able to develop relationships with the different CEOs. How does that work for someone within your position, and how do you get the opportunity to really, you know, learn, you know, obviously hear all the public related things that that they put out about their company, but how do you develop that relationship to get sort of that little bit of an edge to know what else is going on?
Well, look, you know, I mean, look, years ago, regulators sort of clamped down on Wall Street and created Reg FD, which means a CEO can't tell me, hey, we're doing this, and not tell someone else. But what happens with experience over time is you sort of get to know you get to know the person, you get to know just their personalities, and you can kind of sense, oh, they seem a little bit more excited about this new market, this new initiative than before. So the way it works is there are quarterly earnings calls when the companies put out their quarterly financials. And when that happens, there are opportunities for analysts such as myself and competitors to ask questions to the management teams. It's all public. You can certainly Google it. We'll learn a lot there. Then there are also opportunities to be out on the road, to take companies, to meet with investors. So I've certainly spent time traveling across the country with various leadership teams. And, you know, from their perspective, their ultimate goal is to make money for their shareholders. And we are sort of able to, you know, tell investors what we think, whether the company's executing on their plan, whether their plan makes sense. And if we think the stock market reflects the value that the management team is bringing to the company. So, yeah, I'd say you certainly get to know management teams very well. It's fascinating, Wayne, I'll tell you, just seeing how they evolve over time. You know, I think a great example is Penn National Gaming, obviously a company very involved in digital gaming. But if you go back far enough, you can find transcripts of earnings calls where I asked the management team, hey, what do you think about sports betting around like 2017 when PAPSA was sort of on the docket, but you didn't know how it would go. And the answer was, we'll see. You know, frankly, even post-PAPSA, the answers were very much like, we'll get people in the door to buy chicken wings and beers and play a little blackjack, but this is not going to be a needle mover. And, you know, I think today a lot of Penn, Caesars, a lot of those management teams think much differently about it. So it's great to sort of be there and have that constant dialogue where you can sort of spot the changes in tone from these management teams.
Well, you mentioned Penn, you know, they're based in Wyomissing, Pennsylvania, on the western part, you know, sort of the central western part of Pennsylvania, and you know, a very, you know, conservative for the most part, you know, gaming company, a much larger gaming company than most people even really realized. And they come out of the gates and they do deals with Barstool. They do deals with theScore. Was that surprising to you?
Well, look, I think Penn took a very disciplined and thoughtful approach, right? They had all these licenses and, you know, they went from sort of being a very well-run regional operator. And by the way, they're fantastic run. Every measure, their margins are well ahead, just how they think. But I think it was thought of as sort of an old school, like, you know, old economy type company, not cutting edge. And you really got to hand it to Jay Snowden. He said, wait a minute, I am in more states than anyone else. I have more licenses. Odds are that's how, you know, clearly some states like Tennessee, anybody can get a license, or not anybody, but most people. But in most states, you need to have a gaming land-based license to at least have a primary online license. So he started by kind of renting out those licenses to get money to ultimately pay for his strategy. And I think the Barstool tie-up and ultimately they'll own 100% of it shortly was clearly brilliant. It definitely marked a change. I think a lot of us were thinking, wow, the core Penn customer is, say, a slot player, a 60 plus, typically female slot player. And obviously the core Barstool consumer is not that, is far from that. So I think that is the challenge, mirroring the two, this sort of millennial player with Penn's core slot player in their land-based casinos. And, you know, I think I'm, you know, we're big fans of the management team there. I think if anyone can figure out how to do it, they will. And they're already starting to see some benefits to their strategy, although very early days. But it's fascinating just to see the evolution of these companies.
You know, one of the big things that we are really bullish about at 76 Capital with the overall gaming and sports betting industry is really this convergence of the physical and digital worlds, how you really can bring people together, not only online on the app, but also within the physical world. And you look at companies like Caesars and MGM that have, you know, and even Penn, right, who have incredible physical footprints all across the United States. They are all starting, they're part of the kind of the top group of digital players as well. What do you see is happening there, how they're starting to bring their physical pieces together along with their digital pieces?
Well, Wayne, you know, I think that's the most exciting part of gaming right now. And, you know, I cover a company called Everi, which is sort of a small to medium size gaming manufacturer. And they have a big focus of theirs is something called cashless gaming. And effectively what cashless gaming means is you can use your mobile wallet to move money to a slot machine, a table game, a gift shop, a steakhouse. And that same wallet can also, you know, be used to play on BetMGM when you're home, or Caesars when you're at home, to bet on sports. And I think creating this ecosystem for the player where they can gamble, play whatever they want, and even dine, and, you know, that really is powerful, just moving to the full omni-channel experience. And look, omni-channel, and by the way, there are other great companies like Sightline and obviously other manufacturers as well, like IGT Light and Wonder, who are doing stuff in this realm too. But the point is, you are seeing that convergence, and I think we're just sort of touching the surface here. And omnichannel can extend beyond gaming as well, right? Into sports consumption, into, you know, the F&B world. I think about deals like MGM with Buffalo Wild Wing. There's some real exciting elements. And none of this stuff, I think, I would have thought was feasible when I entered the industry in 2003, just given the regulatory barriers, the reputational barriers that companies saw. You know, I was just talking about, you know, watching the Super Bowl in Vegas back in like 04, and, you know, they couldn't even advertise the Super Bowl. It was watch the game. There was such this stigma, and all that has gone away. So, yeah, I think, you know, effectively, this is an experiential industry, and I think the omnichannel element adds digital, but not sort, you know, and but there's elements of experiential that can be gained through it. So very exciting time right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in our neck of the woods in Philadelphia, in the suburbs, Parks Casino and Chickies and Pete's created, they have a sports bar with a sports book inside of it in a suburban shopping center, right? It's the first and only of its kind. But what's the thought of, you know, these types of things will be happening? I mean, with sports books inside of stadiums and arenas, which we're now seeing, and, you know, there's a lot of really interesting new developments that are coming along with this.
Yeah, I think, you know, on one hand, I think the sky's the limit. On the other hand, and I know you're very involved with compliance companies, I think we do need to have a sense that this needs to be done in a thoughtful way. What hampered this was the regulations, right? I mean, the you know, going through all the reviews and all the compliance checks, because regulators, I think, you know, they're entrusted to make sure that nothing gets too out of hand, right? Like, I think you can say this can become the biggest thing ever, but there are social ramifications if these companies and stuff get, you know, go unchecked. It's an extra burden that the gaming industry has, but I think it's our duty, if you will. If you look at addiction rates here for gaming, it's probably on a percentage basis not meaningfully different than alcohol. And, you know, if anything, stuff like obesity are probably worse. But still, I think left unfettered, there are real ramifications. And if you look at what's going on in Europe and other parts of the world, at a certain point, you get blowback. So I think the sky is the limit, so to speak, but I think we need to be measured and disciplined in how this proceeds.
When you look at the overall gaming industry, where do you think we are today with technology and where the, you know, as an example, like where the apps are today? One of the things we always talk about is like, we're kind of at that 1.0 piece of what apps will look like. What are some of the things that you think or you're hearing about will be coming down the pike?
Sure. So look, I think further integration, whether it's to your phone, to actual live television, live events, to TV, just really making a seamless experience. Clearly, we're all aware that the marketing blitzes have been very prevalent over the past few years, but that has to stop. Clearly, companies aren't trading at 20 times revenue anymore. The capital markets environment is a lot more difficult now. So I think technology has to be the differentiator and really what the consumer wants. And the consumer wants ease of use, ease of sign up, ease of play, and to get the bets they want when they want it as quickly as they want it. So I think we just, you know, have to develop that further. I think there's some amazing products out there now, but clearly things are going to improve, and they're going to improve drastically over the next few years.
Also, Barry, you know, from your vantage point, how have you seen, you know, the world of sports and the leagues and the teams and the conferences who used to weren't even allowed to walk through a casino? God forbid they placed a bet, right? they are active participants in the gaming industry. How, you know, what's that been like for you to see that over the last four or so years? And now, where do you think that's all going?
You know, again, it's just been fascinating. I think to an extent, gambling has always been a part of American culture, right? It's sort of like an apple pie, if you will, you know, office pools, just any sort of gaming, if you will, done responsibly. And there was always this disconnect where the leagues just really, you know, they knew it was going on, but they just weren't willing to accept it. And chalk it up to, you know, to the NBA sort of taking baby steps, chalk it up to different, you know, chalk it up to COVID, to finance, you know, finances at the end of the day. But at the moment, there's a real buy-in, and it is shocking to some of us, and it's very welcome. So we'll, you know, again, I think it's really incumbent on us not to have a, you know, a Black Sox, you know, Shoeless Joe Jackson event or some huge event which could change that sentiment, and it could change in a flash. But you know, that I think is what we need to watch out for, just to make sure that things are done thoughtfully, not too quick, and done responsibly.
I also would love to get your thoughts on what's happening with the fact that the major, we just talked about the sports teams and leagues and what they're doing, but what about some of the major tech companies, Google, you know, Meta, Amazon, you know, and Apple, and their plays within sports today. And you know, the fact that you're watching, you know, Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime, you know, Apple TV has the rights to MLS next year. Apple TV did the Friday Night Baseball games, right? Their entry into the world of sports and sports media, do you think they're going to start to come into the world of gaming even more than they already are today?
Look, there's diverging views here, right? On one hand, the burden that you have to go through to get licensed is extreme, as I'm sure you know. Does every board member of Apple and Microsoft want to go through this? When I worked at IGT, our view was no, and that's what gave us an edge. If you look at the technology in gaming right now, it's not cutting edge. There's like, you know, on a casino floor, there's technology that's a decade plus old, which is just hitting the floor now. So it's not that we don't have brilliant people working for us. It's that the regulators have to go through this review process to make sure there isn't crime, there isn't corruption. You know, that said, what's happening now in sports is game changing, and it brings you one step closer. So I don't know if you get to the point where these large tech companies want to take on the risk and want their, you know, to be operators, if you will, and go through the licensing process, but they don't necessarily have to. You know, there's certainly means for them to monetize their relationship with the consumer in, you know, and that pathway to gaming, whether that's through an affiliate model or again, just some partnership. Clearly there's, you know, Disney owns a percentage of DraftKings, there's cross ownerships, but I'd say never say never. You know, regulators have, you know, clearly seen the attractiveness of having these large companies associated. So you never know if there'll be modifications that'll suit everyone's needs down the path.
You know, one of the things that I've had the opportunity and really been fortunate to talk with individuals like you at, you know, some of the major securities firms across the country and quite frankly the world that are following the gaming industry and just have many other areas within their purview that they do a lot of work on. And what I'm hearing from different individuals in similar seats of yours is that your colleagues that maybe you know focused on tech and are, you know, specifically watching say Apple or Amazon, they're having conversations with, you know, your side of the world as well. Same thing with media, you know, I guess they're also media companies too, but like the media players are also, it's like a little bit of a, talk about convergence, right? Or it's like there's a little bit of a convergence kind of going on within your banks as you guys are having these conversations because the worlds are kind of all coming together. Is that happening with you as well?
It is. And I think it, you know, we all somewhat bring something to the table. I think when DraftKings hit, you know, $60, $70 plus, it wasn't the gaming investor driving it up. It was the TMT investor being advised, or the internet investor being advised by those analysts that here's this amazing unfettered market that, you know, they could be the leader in. And the valuations that we're used to for gaming companies went out the door, and it became, let's, you know, because all valuation is discounting future cash flows. It's just a question of how far in the future you want to give them credit for. I think from a regulated gaming perspective, my inclination is to think regulation is real. And if, you know, at some point things need to be in check, and that's, you know, the context of how gaming companies like Caesars, MGM have traded. So we sort of reached uncharted territory, which a lot of those investors were new to the space. And I think, you know, now the tide has shifted in the opposite direction, arguably too much so in the opposite direction. But yeah, it's been amazing watching this new investor set come in and think about, you know, just think about things a little bit differently, thinking about the explosive growth that these companies can and will continue to see, you know, and maybe me at times being a Debbie Downer, trying to talk about, well, there are real regulatory burdens, there are real regulatory delays, and you know, that is a very true assessment, though.
Well, there's absolutely, you know, and I think it's important. I think it's one of the lucky things that this industry actually has some guide rails. Being, you know, an investor in the sports industry, right? I mean, there's certainly, I think some people wish there were some guide rails around, say, NIL these days and some of the things that are happening around college, that there are none. It'd be nice to have something out there. But I think that it's really fascinating to see what's happening. But I think you just said, you know, one of the things that has attracted a number of companies to the industry is this potential for really exceptional growth. And, you know, there are a number of companies that operate internationally that really haven't stepped on the gas here in the US. There are other sports related businesses in the US that haven't made their play in gaming yet, but have been rumored to come in. You know, where do you think what do you think the future is going to look like for the gaming industry?
I wish I knew that, right? I'd be a much wealthier man if I knew exactly. But look, I think it's clear that we're still in the early innings here. There's clearly potential for new entrants to come in. Of course, companies like Fanatics, you know, Bet365 making a stronger push. There's a number of things that could happen, right? There's certainly forecasters who've said the world in 5 years or 10 years will look a lot different. I clearly remember 2003 seeing, you know, leading poker companies who dominated the gray market at the time, who are now sort of nowhere to be seen, and you know, new folks came in. So I think a lot depends on how the market will evolve over time, how those relationships will. I think, again, the public markets are telling companies that you need to be on a path towards profitability. You need to, you know, move away. We're moving away from revenue-based multiples to focusing on profitability. And that creates potential opportunities for new companies who are well-capitalized to come in, who potentially want to start issuing promos to drive new players. But does it create a healthy environment for this industry to go, or does it simply create a promiscuous player environment where we never reach a true profitability equilibrium? I hope that's not the case, because I think that is counterproductive. I think at some point consumer needs to stop getting all these freebies and free money. And these companies need to make money, otherwise they won't be able to offer us the products that we want as consumers. So, but yeah, I think the next few years will be fascinating. I know Fanatics, I think next month will be making a presentation to investors in New York, and we're certainly going to be hearing more about that, their strategy and other companies' strategy going forward.
Well, it's certainly an exciting time. There's, you know, as you said, maybe things have you know, went from one end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum. Things may be coming back, new entrants coming into the world of sports betting today. Certainly from our perspective, all the entrepreneurial companies and entrepreneurs who are building the next generation businesses, we're excited about that, whether that's on the B2B side or on the infrastructure side, as well as new types of consumer plays. And, you know, we look at the all these incredible opportunities today with the fact that, you know, we're sitting here where you have legislation passed in 36 states across the U.S., which I think, you know, probably 4 years ago, most prognosticators would have said no way that this many states would have already passed laws. But we still have three really big ones out there. So one of the last things, I guess, as we start to wrap up here on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Series, I mean, what do you think? You know, what do you think is going to happen in California and potentially Texas or Florida in the future?
Yeah, I just came back from a trip across Southern California. You know, I think politics has always hampered California, certainly in the poker years, in the early 2000s, mid 2000s. I think the polling right now would suggest having two ballots, you know, ahead of the voters, which are so similar, one digit off, actually, that the confusion somewhat sets in and you might see two no's. I think speaking to market participants on the ground there and the tribes and obviously the commercial operators, there is a sense that this is going to get done eventually. Too much money has been put in. So if this November both ballot initiatives fail, look for this to come up again in 2024 or 2026, essentially till it gets done, because that's what the consumer wants. And more neighboring states will get this. And gaming really operates in sort of why are my citizens going next door and all this tax revenue is leaving my state? Let's keep it in my state. So I think it's an inevitability. Texas, I think the same. I think, you know, clearly it's a conservative state. There's clearly a lot of interests on the border in Louisiana, Oklahoma, who don't necessarily want to see land-based gaming, and that's a touchy subject. But again, I think sports betting is so universally understood, and the buy-in that we have now is really remarkable from the leagues, from the operators. Let's also remember it's greenfield for a lot of these operators. iGaming, which I think, you know, a lot of us think sports betting is the Trojan horse for iGaming and the profitability, but that still has an air of controversialness to it, given the fact that there's uncertainty about the cannibalization of land-based gaming when you can play blackjack on your phone. Sports betting, in most cases, it's not really cannibalizing going to a casino, because the casinos typically don't have retail sports betting. So I think it's an inevitability. I just don't know if it's going to happen this year or a few years down the road.
Well, Barry, it's been really great having you on our 76 Capital Leadership Series. And you may have heard some of the sirens in the background as we're taping this show from New York City. But it's been awesome having you on the show, hearing all your different perspectives across the gaming industry. You know, I think it's been a really great for our audience on our 76 Capital, you know, Leadership Show to really hear, you know, all the things that you've done in your career, what's happening today, what's going to potentially be happening in the future. And I look forward to seeing you, you know, at all the different conferences and shows around all over the place, because you're always there. I mean, I guess before, as I leave you with this, I mean, is that something that you've been able to, is that been a really important part of your, to help you, is the fact that you said you're in California, you're at the shows, you always are speaking to the leaders, you're interviewing, you know, folks like, you know, across the industry. I mean, is that really an important thing to make you successful in your job at Truist?
Yeah, absolutely. I think speaking to people, getting different perspectives, going to shows, meeting folks like yourself who have the pulse on the market, it really is essential. You just kind of have to, you know, there's hard work and then there's hard work, you know? So, I'm looking forward to seeing you out at G2E next week as well.
Absolutely. Well, great. It's been awesome having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. This has been a great edition of our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. This was with Barry Jonas, the Managing Director of Truist Securities. Barry, thanks so much again, and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it.
Take care.